Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go. It's Cody and Gold on a Friday. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Cody back with us.
Hello.
Rocking the KC sweatshirt today. People were saying, is he just taking off every Thursday now? And I said, I don't think so. I said, no. Hey, life happens. I said, life happens. I think he's back tomorrow. And here we are.
He's back. You know, sometimes things come up in your daily life.
That's right.
Like you have to detox your entire house because
Chipino.
Kids get ill. In this case,
you
Chipino.
You got to stop making the Chipino, man. It's making everybody
I've
sick.
I've never made Chipino again.
Is that the reason?
No.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not Chipino. My kids wouldn't eat. They wouldn't eat Chipino the first time. They certainly wouldn't eat it the second time.
I don't blame them.
My kids will not eat seafood stew.
By the way, that's not like...
That's because you don't like seafood.
A Friday at 10 a.m., that also just sounds disgusting.
Sounds like it'd be a little heavy in the guts.
Yeah. Oh, my
But a lot of
goodness.
Foods don't sound good at 10 a.m.
Fair.
Like, I don't want, like, a chicken parm sandwich at 10 a.m.
No, but I think if
Too
you...
heavy.
Depends on what shift you work, you know? I mean, for some people, this is lunchtime already, you know?
I figured out, like, on the weekends, has this started to affect you? On the weekends, be like, hey, what do we want to do for lunch? And I'm like, I'm so... Like, we eat lunch so rarely... Oh. Monday through Friday. It's throwing off lunch for every other day I'm not here. We were in Vegas, and our show ends at noon. And it was like, and my wife was there, and the whole thing. And I'm eating lunch. I'm like, I don't even want to eat this. I'm so full. It's just like, I don't even want this food.
Well, it's one of the...
My whole schedule's thrown
off. It's one of two things. Either if you have... Because I'm not used to having a huge breakfast either, given our you know...
Yeah, I usually eat something.
So, like, if you have the heavy breakfast, then I'm definitely not having lunch. And if it's the opposite, if I have a heavy lunch, then you're not even hungry till much later. Anyway, I know you're obviously supposed to have breakfast. It's the most important meal of the day. I understand. I get that.
That's right, guys. Get your bowl of cereal.
That's right. That's right. No, today, you know, I went with a very healthy grilled chicken egg white sandwich from Chick-fil-A today.
Oh.
It was really, really good.
So you won't need lunch. You're set.
I'm set. All right, you guys can interact with us on the Jay Southland Service text line 913-586-7965. Coming up in about 12 minutes, yes, we will get to what happened last night in Baltimore, implications in the AFC, Baltimore versus Cincinnati. Got a lot of tweets about it last night. Drew and I haven't spoken much this morning. We'll try to
keep it cordial this morning.
We'll try to talk it out.
We're trying to be as respectful as we can be, right?
That's right. So we'll get
to
that.
I'm going to play mediator today. You guys be nice to each other.
We'll get to that.
My kids are fighting.
We'll get to that unbelievable Thursday night football game.
That was a great game.
It really was. It really was. But let's start talking Chiefs, though, because it is a Red Friday in Kansas City. The Broncos are coming to town. Time to kick the donkey's ass again out at Arrowhead on Sunday. We think we'll be heading out to Denver around 12:30 today, talking with former Broncos safety Nick Ferguson. But we keep an eye on how the Chiefs are winning. We keep an eye on these margins and how they're getting it done and what the margin might be on Sunday as well.
It doesn't matter. This is the whole thing. The league is close. Last night is a perfect example of how the league is close. There are a lot of close games. And the only big negative I continue to hear about Kansas City is, well, you know, they win the so close, and this is the lowest point margin of victory for any team that's ever started 8-0. By the way, the second lowest won the Super Bowl. So, oh no! Oh, what happens when you don't win by enough? It doesn't matter. They do not get blown out. I actually think Denver's a bit of a challenge. They are good on the offensive line. They're good on the defensive line. They protect Bo Nix better than any... Statistically, they protect Bo Nix better than any quarterback in the NFL is protected. They also have one of the better pressure rates from their defense in the NFL. They're a challenge. I expect this game to be close. I expect this game to be low scoring. This is two top five scoring defenses in the league. Will I care on Monday if they win 14-10? Nope.
Ooh, sounds like a terrible
sure
game.
Yeah. Oh, it will be fun to watch. Yeah. But will I care that the Chiefs came out victorious again before they eventually take on Buffalo? No. Because in the end, the way in which they win is the least important part of what they're capable of doing. Because I would expect a team to win close who's lost, I don't know, six important players at one time or another this year. Some might still come back. Pacheco could still come back. Maybe Hollywood Brown comes back later. You know, like what? Maybe Jalen Watson in a miracle comes back later. But if that's the case, I don't care that they're playing close games. I don't see how that impacts the Chiefs negatively.
Well, a lot of it is this organization, this regime that has been together for a very long time now, and obviously have the wins and the
pedigree,
titles,
yeah.
Pedigree, all of that to back it up. You're not as concerned like, oh, it's not sustainable. That's the difference. Pick any other team in the NFL. I don't care whether you want to say Baltimore, you want to pick the Green Bay Packers, whoever, just any other team. When they win closely, yeah, they don't apologize. But they don't have the track record of like, oh, that they can keep doing this all year, or they can do this in the postseason, or this is going to come back to bite them. That those are conversations I think we'd be having if you were in those cities, because those quarterbacks of those teams haven't won anything yet. Their coaches, with exception, you know, pick whatever team, you know, most of the coaches in the league obviously don't have rings. There's a handful that do. And so they don't have the pedigree to understand from a fan base perspective why they should believe as much. Here in Kansas City, all they've done over the last couple of years is win close football games, make the plays that they have to make. So whether that's against Denver or it's against Buffalo next week, it really doesn't matter. I think for some people, they'll lower it down like, hey, if you only beat Carolina by three. But honestly, this team, no, I don't care. When any of these other teams only beat Carolina by three, I'm more concerned because I'm like,
what does that say about you?
If Kansas City in 3 weeks after beating Buffalo, hopefully, and Denver, and they're undefeated, and at that time they'll be what? After a Carolina win would be 11-0 or something like that.
Yeah, well, I can't. They won by three. They're 11-0.
No, exactly.
I think that it's different. Like you mentioned with the fraudulent ones. We watched that 9-0, 10-0 Pittsburgh team, and we sat on this show, you and I, and said, that team's a joke. I don't even take them seriously. That's a joke, 9-0. How could you possibly say that about the Chiefs franchise? Like, I know we're getting ready to talk about the Cincy and the Ravens game, but this is kind of like a point I'll make before we get into specifically what's going on with them. It's the excuse-making from other teams that usually comes with losing. The Chiefs are trying to have people excuse-make against them for winning. So, for instance, one of the things I'm sure people will say on a national program, or maybe Drew will say today about his Cincinnati Bengals is, well, it's not Joe Burrow's fault, right? They got one of the best offenses in the league, which they do. And it'd be like, he can't play defense. They got one of the worst defenses in the league, which they do. Patrick Mahomes once had the worst defense in the league. It was wretched. I cannot begin to describe to you how bad his defense was. In that year, Patrick Mahomes won his division, was the number one seed, went to the AFC title game. Like, I mean, it didn't stop him from having major accomplishments. In the season when he went 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards, like Joe Burrow might this year, Patrick Mahomes won the MVP because his team was the number one seed, did successful things in the postseason, and then turned it into even more things after. Losers find ways to lose games all the time. The Chiefs are the antithesis of that. They win more games that they should lose than maybe any team in NFL history. So the one score stuff is actually just a tribute to Mahomes and Andy Reid's ability to win those games under any circumstance.
What about Denver and their quarterback? Yesterday, Drew and I spent a good chunk of the Nicks show talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, spent a good chunk of the show talking about Bo Nix. And the one stat that I know you're aware of as well, and we were talking about the show ahead of time.
Deep passing?
And 20-plus yard plays. He's only behind Lamar Jackson, which was pretty stunning. And that was before last night, obviously.
Lamar's probably stone first.
Yeah. Probably has increased the lead a little bit. But his performance, I was pretty low on him coming out of college, and I think he's been fine. Like, I think he hasn't been bad or anything like that. He's been fine, and I think he's perfect for Sean Payton's system and what he wants to do. It does remind you a lot of Drew Brees in terms of they're going to get him out on bootlegs, they're going to do play action, and he will make some great plays. I was on in Denver last night on a couple stations. We were talking about they're asking our opinion of Bo Nix, but then they were discussing him. They're like, it's the inconsistency. Sounds like a rookie, doesn't it? Like, he's just not consistent enough. And that's the thing. To beat Kansas City, you can't be inconsistent at the quarterback spot. And that's why, like, I think a lot of people, there's some people that are nervous about Sunday for a variety of reasons. Like, I think there could be a drive where Bo Nix looks great. And then he might have the three straight drives where he's terrible and missing open guys and all that. So Bo Nix, I mean, the Chiefs have played Joe Burrow already, Lamar Jackson, Kirk Cousins, Justin Herbert. Like, Bo Nix,
pretty far down the list of good
quarterbacks. I don't know if he's dead last. I'm trying to think every single team they've played. But he's pretty low on the pecking order there of QBs. He might actually be the bottom. Who am I missing?
He might be dead last.
Because Kirk, and I just mentioned Burrow. And
all right, so here, let's go. No, what about Derek Carr? Where do you have him?
Okay. Derek Carr was healthy.
Derek Carr's got
he was healthy at that point. Derek Carr's
career.
Just better. He's still better than Bo Nix. Come on now.
So Lamar, Joe Burrow, Kirk Cousins, Justin Herbert, Derek Carr, Brock Purdy. The one that Bo Nix has beat is Gardner Minshew.
Okay, that's the one I'll give
him. He's got Gardner Minshew beat because he doesn't have Baker beat.
But Gardner Minshew, because he's a vet, still is, you know, there's something to be said there.
He can take advantage.
But that'll be the otherwise Bo Nix will be still the worst quarterback they face.
Look, Bo Nix is fine. Like, I'm not terrified of him. That long gain stat, I think, is directly attributed to the thing I just said. It is attributed to their offensive line. The reason why he is able to make deep attempts and complete more of those passes is because he has protection. I don't think Steve Spagnuolo is going to let him feel comfortable back there. I believe, because Bo Nix is a rookie and has never seen a Spags-led defense in his life, is going to get blitzed, and a lot, it'd be my guess, in order to make that offensive line, who's done an incredible job, less comfortable. And that probably leads to mistakes. So yeah, I mean, Denver is not—they're not a pushover. They've got a, you know, good coach. He's fine. Like, he's not like—I don't think he's a top five coach in my mind. He's a good coach. He's not a laughingstock. None of those things. And they are good on the offensive and defensive line. Any team that has that will be no worse than 500 in a calendar year, right? They'll be 8-9, 9-8 at worst. They'll fight. They'll be annoying. That's what we described him as this year. They're kind of a pain in the ass. That's all I expect for Sunday. Not a loss.
Don't you think
they're a pain in the ass a little?
Much like the Raiders game earlier this year, how we discussed that, like, because the Raiders got them last year on Christmas Day, and in this case, because the Broncos in their building, not at Arrowhead, they still have the long losing streak at Arrowhead, but in their building, because they beat the Chiefs, I don't think you have to worry about the team being ready for this game. This was a Broncos team that embarrassed them in their last year in Denver.
Yes.
So I think there's something to be said for that, too. It's why I was less worried about the Raiders this year because of what they did on Christmas Day, and why I'm less worried about the Broncos, because I think it's easy when you have a long dominant streak over somebody to, like, okay, we just beat these guys all the time. At Arrowhead, they do. That streak is still intact. But the Broncos embarrassed the Chiefs. That was an embarrassing loss last year. I know different quarterback. That was Russ. It wasn't Bo Nix. Still the same head coach and most of the same roster.
Yeah, they've gotten... And I think now you get the motivation of, we don't want to ever lose. Like, the bad game motivation is equally contributed to the, wait, no, we don't want to lose a game.
Yeah,
we're not planning on losing a game.
Perfect.
I think it'd be easier to lose this game if you were 7-1, weirdly enough. I know that sounds probably kind of silly or stupid.
I get your point, though.
If you're 7-1, I think you're more likely to lose this game than if you're 8-0 and you're taking every damn opponent serious because you want to win every game you want to win and all those things. Right, we spent long enough probably on this show not talking about Cincinnati and Baltimore last night, which was maybe one of the best regular season games of the year.
It really was.
It was another good one.
It was a heck of a game. The last time the Ravens and Bengals played, it was awesome as well. That was the 41-38 overtime win. Last night, we all saw that probably. Ravens 35-34 win. Comes down to a two-point conversion. It was definitely...
Right after the week that we said that they should have gone for two against Kansas City.
It was totally the right call.
Of course it was.
Absolutely the right call for Zach Taylor and the Bengals to go for two. No question, nobody should be critical of Zach Taylor for that.
We missed the penalty, too.
Yeah, missed penalty, but they also had four penalties on the drive that moved them down the field.
Never got to that point.
That's where I'm, you know, same thing applies, whether we're talking about the Chiefs or not. Like, I hate making it seem like the refs cost anybody a game. There was
a questionable
call on the two-point conversion, for sure, but there was also, to me, a little soft call or two that got the drive pushed 50 yards down the field for Cincy. Anyway. So, great game. Baltimore continues to put pressure on Pittsburgh in the AFC North race. I told you I didn't care if Baltimore won because, to me, they still aren't going to be a one seed.
They're effectively four games back at Kansas City, right?
And everything like that. Then you have Cincinnati, who is a 4-win football team, and they are 4-6. We have talked about this at great length. I said yesterday I wanted the Ravens to win, to just end this. Just
bury them.
Bury Cincinnati.
But they played close.
That's what I hear. That's what I hear.
So people aren't going to be ready to bury them yet.
Bury them. Stop the conversation. Much of my frustration about this has been, as you guys know, and our disagreement with Drew has been, we have to stop talking about a 4-win team like they're an 8-win team. They're a 4-win team for a reason. Yes, Joe Burrow is playing amazing. Fact. That is true. He was incredible last night. Jamar Chase, the stats he put up were insane last night. Also a fact. True. You know what is also a fact on top of that? They're a 4-win team and their defense is garbage. Their defense sucks and they can't beat anybody worth a damn in the NFL. What, the Panthers and the Patriots are two of their 4 wins?
No, the Patriots was a loss.
They lost. Even worse. They couldn't even beat the Patriots. I was trying to give them credit.
No, they lost to that team, unfortunately.
Where are you at, Drew? Because I feel like we can't, at some point, you know, like they do have to win a game.
You
like,
gotta just call it, Drew.
It's over. It's done. The notion of like, well, they're going to make the playoffs and win a playoff game. How can you say that when they're a 4-win team?
Because they have to make it. I mean, if they make it, they have just as good of a chance as
they
anybody.
Have to go 5-2 just to make it. Does this look like a team that could go 5-2?
Carrington said it last night. They got to go 5-2.
They can't.
All right, let me give you the give no, you. I will promise to for Cody and I not to interrupt you for the next 40 seconds. Give me the pat. Tell me why it's not over and what it looks like for them to get in the postseason. And don't tell me they're going to win a playoff game. Just tell me how they're getting here because they have to get there first.
Okay, so if they need to go 5-2, but it includes, if you look at the schedule, it includes games against teams that are on that bubble list. They play Pittsburgh twice still. They play the Chargers. They play the Broncos. They have to win those games in order to get there. We already know they have to go 5-2 anyways, but if they go 5-2, it includes wins against the Chargers. It includes wins against the Broncos and the Steelers. They're going to position themselves in that spot where they can make the playoffs still. If the Chiefs beat Chiefs fan, if you want to bury the Bengals, you should hope that the Broncos beat the Chiefs this week.
Okay, it's been 40 seconds. Crazy. We got to cut you off there. That's the most ludicrous thing.
For that,
Chiefs fans are not. Chiefs fans. I understand the standings. Chiefs fans are not rooting to lose. Come on now, Drew. Stop with that. That is like loser talk, though, from a Cincinnati fan. Like,
no, it's not.
Suggesting like Chiefs fans should want the Broncos to beat them on Sunday.
If you want the Bengals to miss the playoffs as badly as you sounded yesterday, Gold, then you should not want
my Broncos thing is because I'm sick of talking like them, like they're the same team they were 2 years ago. They beat. Congratulations, Joe Burrow. You're right. You always have that. And clearly Bengals fans are going to literally take that with them to the grave. They beat Mahomes once in the AFC title game. At some point, I don't care what happened. A lot of things have happened in three or four years ago. There's a ton of things that have changed in this world in 2 or 3 years. And Cincinnati winning an AFC title game feels like 20 years ago.
That's fine.
I don't care if Cincinnati makes the playoffs. I'm just saying they won't. Like, it doesn't, like, I don't fear them if they get in because there's no reason to fear them. Look, I'll give credit.
You fear the Ravens.
Of course I do.
No, you can't say that to me because the Chiefs, the Bengals, the Ravens.
The Chiefs don't fear anybody, being honest.
The Ravens are winning those games, but to me, you can't watch last night and say, I'm worried about that Ravens team against this Chiefs team. I don't think you can.
I think that's a fair statement but I'm not worried about Cincy. I'm not worried about Baltimore. I don't think I'm worried about Buffalo. We'll find out next week if I should be. Both of those teams last night, their defenses are terrible. Baltimore included. Defense is horrific, but at some point, like the wins do have to matter at some point. Like we can keep saying, like you went through the schedule, and I said that I wanted to give you a chance to do that, and you said like they go 5-2. Do we not see the problem with saying that out loud? Like they're a 4-6 team, and then we're like they got to go 5-2, and then we go through the schedule, and we're like, oh, it's an easy schedule. Nobody can say they have an easy schedule when they themselves are a four and six team, though. Like the Chargers, they play them next Sunday night. Why is Cincy any better than the Chargers? Why are they any better?
I'm not
saying that it's an easy schedule. I'm saying that if they go 5-2, they're going through the Broncos, they're going through the Chargers, who are directly competing with them, where if the Chiefs beat the Broncos this weekend, the standings basically shape up the exact same as they were yesterday with seven games to go.
But so, they have to win eventually.
Here's the trouble on the map.
I understand, but I'm telling you that if they're going to make it, they're going to beat the Chargers and the Broncos. If they go 5-2, which they have to do, they will in all likelihood, need to beat the Broncos and the Chargers to do that, which theoretically they hold tiebreakers on. It helps them get into the dance. And based on what we've seen last night, great game last night. It's been great whenever they play the Ravens, it seems like. It's been great when they played the Chiefs. They have just as good of a shot as anybody, I think, because of how good that offense is. If they make the playoffs,
defense. But you also you can have a great offense, but their defense isn't just like middle of the road. Like I don't know if it's good to care, you know, to match their offense. They're one of the worst defenses in the entire NFL. Like they had a 2-touchdown lead last night. Like that is
and
a problem.
They fumbled, and then it
they
was 21-21,
blew a 2-touchdown lead.
I understand, but
they're poorly coached.
I understand, but in the same breath, to me, then you can't. The conversation of who's a bigger threat, you cannot utter that the Ravens are not a threat to the Kansas City
Chiefs. Well, I don't think any of them are a threat,
again,
as I said. But if we're forced to choose, I would say Baltimore's a bigger threat than Cincy, because at some point you have to win in the NFL.
Well, I understand. You might say they're a bigger threat than Cincy, and that's fine. But I think that based on the Ravens are no threat to the Chiefs and would lose by double digits if they played the Chiefs again in the playoffs because they don't have that defense.
But this is like, that goes back to the Mahomes stat I gave you when he was in 2018. I'm not arguing and never will argue that Joe Burrow's not having a good season, but good teams, well-coached teams, still win despite their flaws. The Ravens are only a game back in their division. They're winning despite their flaws. Chiefs have won despite their flaws in postseason. I trust the Ravens to do that more. And look, some of this is just like, the math doesn't add up for me in Cincinnati, because I imagine if I went through the last 20 years of history, they have never swept the Pittsburgh Steelers in a season. So, like, they're going 1-1 in those games, which means they have to go 4-1 in the remainder games, which is just assuming they get one against them. Look, I'll give credit to Pete Sweeney, which I think points out the whole thing about Cincinnati and the arrogance that thinks they deserved to be in this conversation at any point, which is the Bengals have more losses this season than the Chiefs have combined since they faced them in the AFC title game and beat them. So, I mean, the Bengals haven't been relevant to the Chiefs in a long, long
Their record
time.
Is now 13-15 since Mr. Burrowhead comment. 13-15 since that happened. And they're 7-7 at their own stadium, and they're 0-3 at Arrowhead ever since calling it Burrowhead.
Oof.
Yeah, I think that look, they showed last night, though, that I think that they're just as much of a threat if they make the playoffs. Again, the big question is if they make the playoffs.
Right. That's a huge problem.
Do you think they're going to make the playoffs?
Of course he does. If they lose next week, he'll...
Well, I'm curious,
if they lose next week, I'm sure there'll be some other reason why they can now suddenly be an 8-win playoff team. I mean, it's kind of crazy at this point.
I think right now the race isn't against the Ravens. Like, them, obviously, the win would have been big, but the race isn't against the Ravens. The race is against the Chargers, and the race is against the Broncos at this point, and the Colts. And the Steelers or whoever else is in there. They need to win the game next week, I think.
So they had two massive games in a row, and they lost the first one, though. Like, those are two biggest games of the season.
Today is the last day until the Bengals are above 500. I'm serious. This is it. This is it. It was a great game last night, and we always talk about Thursday Night Football, and it has implications for the Chiefs. But until the Cincinnati Bengals get above 500, I am done talking about them until that point. Dude, after today, this is it, because it is almost Thanksgiving in a couple weeks, and we're talking about a 4-win football team somehow. Like, but if this and if that, and at some point the results matter more than anything else. Wins and losses, coaches don't get extensions because they were close to winning Super Bowls or close to making the playoffs. Teams don't become great teams because they were competitive. Wins and losses ultimately is all that matter, and one team that we're talking about here has four of them. And we suddenly think they're going to go 5-2 the rest of the way.
I mean, it's happened before with other teams.
Okay.
I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but there's no reason to think that they can't make the playoffs, that they can't turn it around. Now, every single game other than the Eagles game, I think Bob mentioned they're 1-7 in close games. They've scored 33 or more points in five games this year. They're 2-3 in those games. The rest of the league is 38-1. In those games. So
their defense sucks.
It's always
it's not on Burrow. You're describing Burrow's no good.
I'm not trying to argue anything. I'm just saying that every single game has been one play away in certain scenarios. They just haven't been able to make that play. But I don't think that it's something where you watch a team, like, if you watching them play, I don't think you can say they're in the same conversation as, I don't know, the the Raiders, I guess, or I don't know.
You're right. Not the Raiders, for sure. Because the Raiders have like two wins. So of course it's not the Raiders.
Indianapolis Colts, and
but they are, though.
You don't think that the Colts, in watching them play,
they're not as good on offense, but they're better on defense, which means they're equally mediocre.
That's where we just differ.
I understand. They're definitely not a team to win the Super Bowl, I don't think, but in watching them play, but they're not. They're not like there's some teams whose record is fake.
I hear you.
They are 4-6. I know what they are, but they're team wise, the way that they're playing, they're capable of beating anybody in the league. Where there's other 4-5, the Colts are not capable of beating any team in the league the way that I think the Cincinnati Bengals are, based on how you have watched them, have watched the games this year.
But that's what I'm saying. We give Cincinnati way more benefit of the doubt based on prior history. That's what we're
doing. One game, two years ago.
That's all this conversation. I'm 100% with you. They, of course, are not in the same category of the Raiders, who have two wins. Absolutely not. But they aren't any different than the Jets or the Colts. They're not like the only reason why we think
the
only reason
record is
absolutely we only think they are different. We're talking about bad football teams that don't close out games. The Jets don't close out games either. They're not any different.
Win on Sunday, they'll have the same record.
Nobody is saying that Joe Burrow is worse than Aaron Rodgers. That's not the argument. But it is still a team sport, last time I checked, and they are not a good football team. You don't accidentally become four. Now, you might accidentally be a 9-win team instead of an 11-win team. Like, there might be a bad break that happens, a guy gets hurt or whatever. You're not 4-6 instead of 7-0 or 7-1 or something like that. That doesn't just happen by accident when your quarterback's been also healthy all year and you're head coach is the same head coach, not a first-year head coach. They're a flawed football team.
I also think Ja'Marr Chase is the least likable player in the league. He's like a terrible teammate. He had 270 yards and three touchdowns last night. And then in post-game, he was like, sometimes Joe doesn't see it. Like, the hell, man?
Well, I mean, it's true.
He just threw it to you for 270 yards and three touchdowns.
No, I know, but if we're looking at the biggest plays of the game, I think he's right in the fact that Joe Burrow missed the throw. He went deep twice, and I talked about it with Bob and Dusty that's not a Zach Taylor thing.
That's not a teammate thing. Teammates say,
sure,
we fell short. You don't throw your quarterback under the bus.
I don't think Joe would. I guess it would take it as that. But Joe did miss him. I mean, he had him on the cross route.
We will talk about Cincinnati one more time later on today on the show, and then I'm serious. I'm not talking about them until they're a 500 or above 500 football team. This is it. Up next, let's talk about the Chiefs, though. Let's talk about one thing we're not worried about with this football team heading into Sunday.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Just getting started on a Red Friday in Kansas City. A reminder, coming up in about a half hour, Josh Briscoe, Chiefs contributor from Chiefs on SI, will get his perspective on where things are trending for Sunday. We know yesterday it was two straight days in a row. No Juju Smith-Schuster practicing, no Turk Warden, so likely to not have them. What does that mean? But you get Mike Dana and Ozzie Johnson back. So we'll discuss that with Josh Briscoe coming up in just a little bit. But there's definitely one thing that has been trending in the right direction for Kansas City during this winning streak, and that is the old offense. Start looking at the points they're putting up, and there's a reason for it.
Yeah, it's pretty simple for me. And the way I was looking at their schedule and the way that it was lining up and all this other stuff, and I'm like, I don't know. I was trying to decide whether or not the undefeated season was relative. And I was like, what is the single biggest reason that I think the offense is fixed? And it's because Patrick Mahomes, with a legit receiver weapon, is a completely different player. Do you know that over their last four games, they're averaging 28 points a game? That would make them a top five offense in the league. So for the second half now of this stretch, the Chiefs are one of the five best offenses in the league. No more this 10th, 12th, 15th that they've been over the last 2 years. This is probably the strongest stretch of offense they have had in a year and a half. Maybe going back to before all of last season, year and a half. They scored 26, 28, 27, and 30 in the last four games. They have moved up to top 10 in total offensive rankings. And because Mahomes has a legit weapon now, they're the most efficient third down offense in the league. Those are the reasons why I do not fear for this offense like returning to form or going back to what they were in the early stretch of the season or anything in there. Honest to God, they might be the most consistent offense in the league at this point. Barring the one 17-point game against the Chargers, the Chiefs are between 22 and 30 points every single week. You know what you have to get to, Gold? Between 24 and 30, pretty much, every single week. You know what they're capable of, and that's because their third down efficiency is what makes them the level of offense they are.
Well, this past week, it was so evident. It had to be against Tampa.
But it has been, it's been going that way.
Against the third down numbers, though, went up drastically because Mahomes was 11 of 11, I think it was, at one point.
The only one they didn't get was the one they ended up punting on that fourth down.
Yeah, right before regulation ended, right before it went to overtime when D-Hop hit him the one time so far that they weren't ever on the same page. I mean, other than that, they've been totally on the same page. Yeah, I mean, the third down conversion is a part of this, but I actually think in addition to that, and they go hand in hand, is suddenly they're much better in the red zone. This has been for 3 or 4 weeks now. They're much better. There's a point in time early this season, before week 7, where they were down, 30? I think it was 38% or 29th in red zone percentage. 38.9% was where they were at in red zone touchdown percentage. And then they had a couple good weeks. They bumped it up to 47.8, and they were 25th, which still wasn't great. That was before the Raiders game, before the Bucs game. We just saw how the last two games played out. And so they continue to increase. They're starting to get a little bit closer to the middle of the pack and where they're at on red zone efficiency. And that's why you take a look at the scores and why are they suddenly at 26, 28, 27, and 30? It's because they've been way better in the red zone.
There are only like three offenses maybe now in the league that I am convinced are better than Kansas City. Tell me if you agree with my list. These are the teams that I'm like, okay, they have a better offense than Kansas City. Detroit, Baltimore, and honestly, Cincinnati. Those are the only three teams in the league that I think I would confidently say have a better offense than the Chiefs. The ones who score more are Washington, Buffalo, Tampa Bay, San Francisco, Minnesota, and Green Bay.
I think Washington has a strong case, though, to say they're the better offense. Now, everybody will pinpoint a few things with them this year. They're obviously having an unbelievable season. You would say, how long can they keep it up? They're perfect on fourth down still this year. Perfect on fourth down. And there was another metric. They have not turned the ball over at all. Like, is that sustainable with a rookie quarterback? They don't turn the ball over. That's why the Commanders are where they're at. So I actually do think they have a better offense.
They have an argument, but you wouldn't just say it unquestioned,
no,
right?
No, I would question how sustainable is being, I don't know, are they like 10 for 10 on fourth down this year or something crazy? And they don't turn the ball over. Can they keep that up with a rookie quarterback? If they can, then the Commanders are going to be a 13-plus win football team.
Yeah, I guess normally I would say no, because that's not the way it works typically. But I don't know. Every once in a while, maybe things are a little bit different. Right now, Washington doesn't even rank. I think they're in the bottom five of total giveaways so far this year. So, I mean, maybe not. And look, that's probably the one thing holding Kansas City's offense back from being what it is. Imagine where they would rank gold points per game if they didn't have a take.
That was the story last year. Then in the playoffs, they didn't turn the ball over. And we saw come playoff time what they were capable of and why they were able to win on the road is they stopped turning the football over. But that's been one of the more amazing things in Washington, like diving deeper into how have they done this other than getting great quarterback play, is they don't turn the ball over and they've been ridiculously efficient on fourth downs.
They are they're number one. I was like, where exactly do they rank? Number one in the league in giveaways per game. That's where Washington ranks. Kansas City, even though they are a top 10 offense right now, is 26th. They're giving it away for free. Every team below them, except for Minnesota, stinks. And so when you start looking at where the problems lie, but that's also like, I guess I excuse that probably more for Kansas City because of what you just said, is that it shouldn't. There's no reason why it should just go away. But for whatever reason, Kansas City is able to be an undisciplined penalty and turnover team on offense for the whole ass regular season. And then it turns to January and it just stops. There's no reason in my opinion, why that should be the case. But it is just a factual case. We got enough years of evidence now to support the fact that that's the case. The offense looks so much better. This is actually a really fun test this week because Denver's been one of the best scoring defenses in the league.
Yeah, and I know people will laugh at that in a way, though, because they saw what the Ravens did a week ago. But they until then they had been really, really good, and nobody had done anything like that. I think it's a credit to what Baltimore's been
Ravens
doing offensively.
Be the best offense in the league.
Yeah, well, I don't know where the Chiefs are now at points per game. At 10th. Because I was going to say, you think there's three or four offenses better. They're probably like the sixth or seventh best offense in football. They've played like a top five the last 3 weeks, but if we're taking the entire body of work, I think they're probably like the seventh offense in football. Points per game is literally they are the 10th best offense.
Last year, they were like the 15th best offense. Mm-hmm. Truly.
Yeah, 14th, 13th.
For the regular season, that's really what they were. So if I made you rank out the top 10 offenses in the league, Golden, you had them at sixth. Okay, what if I made you rank out the top 10 defense in the league? Where would you have them?
Yeah, they're top five as well.
Three, maybe, right? Like, this is already an improvement off of last year. That's why last year's team ended up finishing with six losses, and this year's team won't have six losses under any circumstances.
Are you willing to guarantee that?
Yes, I'm willing to. Come on, dude. What are they going to do, lose the next six in a row?
I don't know.
Running out of games to lose six games.
The results don't matter for some teams, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess that's the case. I did briefly see, I know we didn't have this plan to talk about, but I did briefly see, I hope you guys covered it yesterday. Did you see that our hero, Steve Spagnuolo, was just lending cars yesterday? He's offering to lend out his car to Colin Saunders, and you guys don't want to chip in?
Not Colin Saunders. Mike Pinnell got his car stolen. That's the second Chiefs player that we know of since March or April, or since the draft, so May, Xavier Worthy's car got
Mike
stolen.
Mike Pinnell got his car stolen. Spags offered to let him borrow his own car in order to get him something, and you guys don't want to build a bus for him. I can't believe you two. I don't understand why you won't let me raise $10,000 to build this man a bronze bus.
Because he's going to have his own already. He's going to have one already when he's done and his career is over.
He should have it now. What if instead of just like asking people for $9.65, we did like a Spags gala to honor him?
A Spags gala.
And then people just like bought a table that paid for the bus.
Where is this gala happening?
We'll figure.
There's a lot of questions that come from.
Well, obviously. But there are plenty of bars or restaurants or event spaces. We could have the Spags gala. It's a big city.
I don't even have a gala at a bar.
Gala, you think it's got to be an event space?
Yeah.
Think the word gala cannot be in a bar?
Correct. It's not a gala.
How many people do you think we need to get to a gala to raise $10,000? 300? There's a lot of rich people in this city, man.
Again, I think we can do a lot better if we're going to try to raise money. You know,
like for the city, you mean?
Than a bust for Steve Spagnuolo, who will eventually be in the Chiefs Hall of Fame one day, and hopefully becomes the first coordinator in the NFL Hall of Fame.
I think you're underestimating how much we can help people through happiness. You know, $10,000 of happiness.
I think paying for an award is a terrible thing to do. Like paying for an award out of all things, you know, if you're trying to raise $10,000,
it's a bronze bus, man. I can't just ask somebody to do it for free.
It's an award. Well, somebody else, they already do that. Like it's not that already exists.
Someone says, let the billionaire pay for it.
Well, there you go. That too.
Well, I don't have Clark's number, and I don't think he's just going to start building bronze bus because I asked him to.
So you're saying if we have Clark Hunt on at Radio Row, if we're at the Super Bowl ever again at Radio Row, and we have Clark Hunt on the show, we've had him on the show a few times.
Yeah, I'll ask him about it.
Hey, why don't you have a bronze bust yet for Spags?
Over on Twitch, Why Not says, have you considered a Spags bikini car wash at Twin Peaks?
True. That's up your alley right there.
Yeah,
Twin Peaks. Fantastic.
Fantastic.
A lot of choices.
Why are you Cody, why are you trying so hard to save ownership money? Let them do
it. I'm not trying to save them money.
That's right.
I'm just simply offering a way to bring people of this city happiness, including Steve
Spagnuolo. Now, this angle you can get me on. I've said I don't think we need to do this. There's better use of funds. But someone says, if we can get the bust permanently outside of the Buffalo Bills stadium of Spags, then I'm in.
How are we going to install that?
I don't think that's happening.
I'm in. I don't think so either, Drew. But if you can...
Remember we tried to buy a legacy brick?
Raiders. They shut that down.
Patrick Mahomes. Yeah,
they shut that down. The new Raiders stadium, Allegiant Stadium, before it opened, yes, they did legacy bricks like a lot of stadiums do, and we wanted to get a brick.
That said like Levon.
Levon number 15 or 15 owns you, and they obviously shut those down.
We're trying to get a permanent brick installed, making fun of them, but...
Yeah.
Although, he's made his... He's made it his home anyway.
They pop
home
champagne.
Away from home. It's like a vacation city.
They pop champagne and sprayed champagne all over the brand new carpet in that stadium, in that locker room. I think the Chiefs won that one.
I'm just saying. We can entertain it. That's
I hear
all.
You.
So, go ahead.
No, well, we're both saying the same stuff. Oh, how many more words? How many more words can we keep saying consecutively? It's almost like we've done this show together for a while. No, I was going to read one more text. Someone was just saying that if you will finally pay off your bet, Cody, they would donate $100 as well.
$100, huh? Mm-hmm. How much? So $9,900 short. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
How much are you? You know, usually if you're spearhead, this is you want to do the idea. I'm not really on board. Usually the person that spearheads it, you have to have the, what's the term or whatever.
The plan.
You need to jumpstart the fundraising effort. Like what's the commitment that you're willing to make?
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll figure out the dollar amount that I'm willing to commit to this. And then I think we do the Spags gala.
We should just buy you a Spags body pillow to hold Cody over for a while.
I'll ask our guest at 11 o'clock. I'll ask Joshua Briscoe if he's willing to donate to my
cause. I just can't believe you want to get a bust of Spags before Andy Reid has one. That doesn't make any sense.
You know, sometimes you just got to lean into it. I know Andy's going to get one.
Well, Spags is going to get
one. It's a coordinator. Sometimes they don't do that, man.
He should get one.
He deserves his respect. It's a lot different on that end. Meanwhile, the GM meetings have been taking place.
Okay. Have they?
And, yeah. And J.J. Piccolo has spoken to some reporters over there. And what came out of this that sounded interesting to me is we know that they want a leadoff hitter. They've made that pretty clear. But they also are, I think they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. They say they want a leadoff hitter, but they also are like, but there's nowhere to play. People who lead off for your team play every day. Every single day, Gold, if they hit leadoff for your team, they play 150, 160 times. And what I saw this week that I hadn't seen yet is the players. New players who've been mentioned in this, which is Bubich and Marsh. What I think the Royals should do if they want an actual leadoff hitter is package MJ or Michael Garcia with Bubich and Marsh to move on from that. Maybe it includes a minor league player, but this is a way of keeping your minor league system intact while clearing the room for this leadoff hitter you supposedly want. Now, if you move those players for minor league players and you just pay for the leadoff hitter, I'll entertain that as well. But I do think you're going to have to move on from somebody who is in your starting lineup this year if you actually are planning on signing or trading for a leadoff hitter that you plan on playing.
Yeah, the thought of going out and getting a leadoff, the only way I'm willing to trade assets, of course, if it brings back, you know, legit bat, middle of the order bat, or a leadoff bat. That's the only way I'm willing to do it. That's why we discussed the Michael Wacha extension. Yeah. It gives you flexibility if Brady Singer has to be involved in a trade. The only hesitation I would have is the amount of names you're mentioning here. Now, I agree that.
I'm not trading all four.
Yeah. But like, if you told me you had a package MJ with a pitcher to go get that, then yeah, it's something I would be interested in. But I thought you got to go back to the comments from J.J. Piccolo when he had his end of season kind of wrap up press conference and what he had to say about essentially, I'm paraphrasing, like they're still not giving up on a guy that is basically as young still as MJ Melendez.
And Michael Garcia, two very young players.
You know, there's still belief in their minds that while they admit they have to be way more consistent baseball players, you know, and Michael Garcia did not have a good year, that the glimpses are there. And to me, it's different than what we used to say about Adalberto Mondesi. When people are like, well, yeah, we said they had glimpses of Mondesi. Mondesi couldn't stay healthy. Knock on wood, but MJ Melendez and Michael Garcia have been playing. And we have seen glimpses of that. The only way I'm trading them is I think you're getting a legit established leadoff hitter. And I'll be honest, I don't think these names, maybe I'm undervaluing them and how other teams would value them because of the control that these guys all have.
That will be a big appeal.
Are you getting that back? Like, if you told me you traded, let's just say Michael Garcia, I would honestly not trade him anyway, though. But Michael Garcia and Bubich, those two pieces are bringing me back a leadoff hitter. I'm very skeptical.
I think it's possible that it'd be the case for the same reason the Royals aren't willing to let him go. But here's the problem. Let's just say you get a leadoff hitter another way. You just pay for it. And they're like, well, you know, well, then who are you making a part-time player?
Yeah, you have
player?
To make a spot.
And if you're making Michael Garcia or MJ Melendez a part-time player in your lineup anyway, well, then you should just move on.
Yeah, but I'm fine with platooning in left. You tell me if I have to, you know, go back to when Vern joined us in the studio last week, pick a player that everybody's kind of thrown out that they would love to see in a Royals uniform at some point. If you told me it was somebody that platooned, and so MJ and blank player are splitting,
I'm really believing it. But does that make sense?
But that's way more
likely. You got him down to a platoon spot. You're not even starting him anymore.
But I think that's way more realistic than them going and actually getting an outright leadoff hitter that's going to play in 140 games or something.
Versus leadoff's going to move around, and we're going to do that based on lefty-righty. It probably is more realistic. I'm just saying if they're serious about getting one more middle of the order, one more leadoff guy, well, then you have to, like, play bold. You have to, like, move a piece. Because for the first 2 years, 3 years under J.J. Piccolo, they have been more transactional. This year, again, sets up where if they don't want to make a single transaction, they don't technically have to. As it sits right now, they have an entire starting five rotation, an entire bullpen, and an entire starting nine. Like, without making a single move.
Yeah.
They could field a baseball team tomorrow with nine position players or eight position players and a pitcher, five pitchers and a bullpen. Without signing a soul, calling up a person from the minors, you know, Jack Caglione doesn't have to come up. I'm just excited about him now because I watched him hit a 510-foot homer in the Arizona Fall League yesterday.
The power's legit.
That ball travels. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the rest of it's going to work out. I don't know if he's just Joey Gallo, but he hits the ball very far. That's something I do know about Jack Caglione. But when you look at, like, where they are, if you actually want to make the big improvement that they're talking about, you have to make a bolder move. Bolder move is trading away controllable young players at other teams. You just got to find the one team, right, that believes in that player the way you claim you do and that you think there is growth, and then they become their project and not yours, and you're about winning now. That's all. Because that's what Michael and MJ, with their they're still project players for now. Like, you know, like you're still hoping they have the Mike Moustakas turnaround. Maybe they will. Yeah, it's a risk you have to take if you're really willing to do it.
Let's just take, both have similar controllable years ahead. Michael Garcia, MJ Melendez. Let's say they, in this hypothetical, they both would bring back the exact same return. All right, in this hypothetical.
Sure.
Who would you be more likely to actually trade away between the two?
Like, better defense with Michael, but way more natural power with MJ. So they are different players. Michael.
Hold on to Michael. Okay.
I'd be on the fence with it, but I think I'd hold on to Michael.
Yeah, given the outfield position versus third base, I think I would choose the third baseman typically over the left fielder.
What about Bubich or Marsh? You probably trade Marsh first?
Yeah, absolutely.
Lefty, more velocity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. He's just started more recently, that's all. Not coming off a major injury, so just figured I'd ask.
Did you see the news today, though?
Big news?
Did you see the news? It'd been talked about for a while.
A lot of news, man. Well, which kind of news?
Fair enough. Yeah, there's been nothing going on this week. Bucky's. It's official. It'd been rumored. It's official. Bucky's coming to the KC Metro.
Okay.
So it'll be the first Bucky's in the state of Kansas. It's going to be, right that area. The travel center, supersized travel center, going to be out there. Village West Parkway, KCK, right next to Kansas Speedway. A 25-acre plot of land is basically where it's going to be, like that area is going to be. And they unanimously...
They need 25 acres?
Unified government approved that.
What is this, like two football fields worth? I'm going to be honest with you. Never step foot in a Bucky's.
Oh, you're...
Sure, this is going to be close to you, man.
So everybody would say you're missing out. I've been to a Bucky's once in my life. It was a 30-minute wait to get soda.
To get in?
Yeah. No. If you wanted to get in line, we went at the wrong time. It was there was a line long enough.
When it first opens, it's going to be that.
Yeah. There was a line long enough. It probably was at least, I would say, 15 to 20 minutes in line for you to get whatever you were getting.
It won't be that way eventually.
There's like 100 gas pumps essentially at Bucky's. Yeah. It's a massive,
It's not a quick grab and go, but also initially it's going to be way worse. But the official number, 74,000 square feet, 120 gas pumps, a store, 12 electric vehicle charging stations.
Only 12?
It's expected to employ around 200 people.
It's like Love's Travel Stop, but it's like a balloon size.
Yeah, it's huge. Popular travel spot.
I've gone four times, maybe, Drew, ever. When I lived in Texas for a couple years, right outside of Houston, they got a couple. None of them were actually in the city. They're a little bit further out.
They're so big, you can't.
The footprint is insane.
So you can't cover enough ground inside of one, you're saying? You got to pick and choose?
You'll
be in there for a while, but it's not going to take you an hour to comb
the aisles.
But I mean, you can shop there. I mean, they got the Beaver Nuggets. They got all kinds of stuff, man.
You'll have to experience it.
Like, you'll have to go and experience it. I don't know if you need to rush out there on grand opening day.
We can do the show from outside Bucky's.
Let's do it. Cool. Let's do it.
What are they known for, like, other than the being gigantic?
Well, the beaver nuggets are part of it.
Yeah. The beaver nuggets. Are
their beef jerky? You haven't heard that? Don't they have, like, a massive beef jerky selection?
A jerky bar kind of thing. But puffy, crunchy corn. It has, like, a little brown sugar, caramel coating.
They have different flavors and stuff, too, I think, of the beaver nuggets, if I remember right.
There you go. Yeah, I've only been there 3 or 4 times. But it's a truck stop for cars. It's just, someone else says, it's just a freaking gas station. So dumb. I knew we were going to get that text.
Well, that's like the same as like when Whataburger came here.
Yeah.
It's the not having it part, you know? That's all. It's you've never seen it before.
Sometimes you can buy Bucky's condoms. I did not know that.
Branded?
I'll be honest. I'm sorry. I'm sticking with the trusted brands out there.
I also just think that like, if you pull out a Bucky's branded condom in that situation, there's a chance that it's over. There's a chance that the moment has passed. Like, I don't want to say, but like, the second she sees you pull that out of the side table, and it's just like, I'm sorry. Say what now?
Which brand is this? Oh, it's the gas station ones.
The gas station brand. The novelty gas station brand.
Oh my gosh.
That might kill the mood. Maybe you're both are still in it enough.
You think the beaver on the package is going to kill the mood?
I don't know, man. Depends on the girl's sense of humor, I'll say. Depends strongly on her sense of humor. She's kind of a goofy gal. Maybe not, but man, I don't know. I don't know. That's
a lot of people saying the pulled pork sandwich is an unbelievable item there. But I don't know. I live in Kansas City.
I want a great pulled pork sandwich, I'm not going to Bucky's.
I agree.
I'm going to one of 10 great barbecue establishments. 20 great barbecue establishments.
7 different texts about this pork sandwich.
My God, it's everybody.
Yeah. I don't know. I closed the article. I don't know when it said open up.
From the MSX counterpoint, she loves the Bucky's condoms, Cody.
Could be.
Maybe
that's how you know she's wife material, you know? She's got a good sense of humor about you breaking out the Bucky's condoms. She's not taking any of this Someone too serious said, in life.
Well, with Binkley logic, if she stays, she's definitely a keeper.
Jay Binkley.
Did Binkley say he hates Halloween, too?
Oh, yeah.
That was last week. Oh, yeah. He thinks it's like Valentine's Day. He thinks it's not about the kids anymore. That was the whole thing a week ago.
Wait, was Valentine's Day about the kids?
No. What? He's just saying that it's become Valentine's Day. Like, it's not about the kids anymore. Meaning it's been a couple's thing, and Valentine's Day is obviously a couple's thing. He's saying Halloween's become a couple's thing.
He's saying it's supposed to be only about the kids and nobody else.
Oh.
But it's turning into that.
Okay. I disagree, but that's fine.
Up next, we'll
he's not here to argue.
I think everybody disagreed.
We'll get back to the Chiefs with our Chiefs contributor from Chiefs on SI, Josh Briscoe. I want to ask him about a couple of the players that might be out of Sunday's game against Denver.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.